The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends, and thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, we will have Seth Rao on to talk about the Austin FC 2024 schedule. We are also going to jump into some Austin FC transfer rumors. We'll take a look at the depth chart at this point in the season, and then we're going to answer as many listener questions as we have time for. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremiah Bentley. And Landon, last week, it was, I don't know if it was as cold as it is now, maybe colder than it is now, but we were outside meeting with people. That was super fun. I was just, every year I feel like their little like New Year's Day meetup grows. And like, it was just a really good time to have everybody come out and hang out and have a good afternoon and have soccer on TV and have people playing soccer, and just really enjoyed our experience last Monday.
Yeah. Really great to see some familiar faces, to meet some new folks as well that we hadn't met in person before. More people have come out this year than have ever before, so hopefully we can keep growing that year over year. But anyone who came out, thanks so much for doing that. If you weren't able to come out, thanks for listening to the episode. Jeremiah, I have some bad news for you about the New Year's Day meetup.
Oh no.
Do you remember one thing that I told you not to forget before you left?
Was it the baklava from Elise's mom?
Elise Barmettler, yeah. Her mother made us some baklava. And I told you not to forget to remind me to give you some before you left. And you forgot. So I'm putting this on you. But I have even worse news.
What is that?
It's the best baklava I've ever eaten.
Darn it, Landon. I wish you I was hoping you wouldn't say that. I know. I thought when we got back home, I remember that, and basically every day this week, I've thought about the fact that we forgot to pick that up, sort of in the rush of trying to get out of there when the sun went down in the shadow of the stadium. It got very cool, and I think we were both very motivated to leave.
But, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, I mean, good. I guess what I hear is more baklava needs to be made for future events.
It would be welcome. So Elise and mother, if you want to bring us more, we'd be happy to have it. But I think she, instead of using, it's normally pistachios, and then there's usually like some like honey and like rose water elements to the flavor. I think inside, Elise, reach out and tell me if I'm wrong here, but it tasted like it was pecans instead of pistachios. And then I think there was cinnamon in it too, which I know this is not traditional, but I really, really loved it. So Elise, let me know if I'm wrong there. All right, let's jump into the Austin FC news of the week.
I'm very hungry. Let's do it.
What do we got? So we're going to jump into the Austin FC depth chart here in a little bit. I know Matt Doyle today on Monday posted his Eastern Conference. He kind of writes this article every year, but it's like every team's depth chart, where they stand now and like what they need to do moving forward. He put out the Eastern Conference one. I'm guessing the day this comes out, he'll be putting out his Western Conference depth charts. But before we get to that, let's run through some of the transfer rumors and other info that we've gotten since the last record. So another, we're gonna be sprinkling in listener questions throughout this episode. The first one is apt to this section. It comes from Tom Halleck, and he asked, is the hot air O'Brien stuff smoke or technically possible? At the rate we're signing players, when are open tryouts, and are y'all going to be there? So
yeah, first of all, for those people who are not very online, maybe explain what the Hyder O'Brien stuff is.
Yeah, so this is coming from a Twitter account named Fernando Esquivel, and they were reporting that Hyder O'Brien, quote, was offered to Santos Laguna in Mexico, and also mentioned Hyder O'Brien being a, quote, free agent. So we're going to kind of pick apart the things about this that seem off to us. First of all, the fact that he's a free agent. So digging through MLS roster rules can be daunting at times. I have found lately that the best bet sometimes is, instead of reading the roster rules page on the MLS website, is to go to the MLS Players Association website. And they actually have the full collective bargaining agreement posted there. And all of the roster rules are written there in more detail than they are on the MLS website. And so there's a question as to whether or not Jader Obregon currently has a contract with Austin FC, because we had the whole debacle with Joe Corona in the expansion draft where he was a free agent. Austin picked him in the expansion draft and then he didn't sign and walked away and signed with somebody else. And so I think there's like some nerves about that happening again here. I dug into the CBA and there is what I found was reassuring to me, that in the reentry draft, if you don't have, like if you're out of contract and you get picked in the reentry draft, then the team who picks you essentially just has, they have the rights to negotiate a contract with you, but you don't have a contract and they have to offer a bona fide offer to you. And what bona fide means in MLS jargon is either a 10% increase of your former contract or a $15,000 raise, whichever of those two numbers is higher. If the player turns those down, go ahead, Jeremiah.
Oh, I was going to say, but this is not the mechanism by which Austin picked Jader Obregon.
Correct. If that is if they're out of contract. Jader Obregon had an option year on his contract. And so if you read on to the next section, page 99 of the collective bargaining agreement, if you want to follow along at home, it says re-entry draft players who have option years, whenever a team selects the player in stage one of the re-entry draft, that player's option shall be deemed exercised by MLS and the player shall be assigned to the team selecting the player. So what I'm reading this, and tell me if you think I'm reading this wrong, Jeremiah, but what I'm reading here is because he had an option year when Austin FC picked him in the expansion draft, that option year was automatically triggered. He automatically has a contract with Austin FC.
Yeah, that's the way I also read this, is that we've talked about a lot, although apparently maybe not for Alex Ring, but almost in every situation, options in Major League Soccer are club options. And so this would mean that Austin FC was picking up the club option for his contract.
Correct. So this whole thing, just because of all of what we just said, the whole report sounds made up. But if there were a move to Santos Laguna, I have great confidence that it would be for a fee. That this would be Santos Laguna buying Jader Obregon from Austin FC, and we would be getting some money for it. So Phil West also was able to confirm through sources that Obregon is indeed under contract and reportedly will be in camp with Austin FC next week. So this seems like nothing to me. I wouldn't be too concerned about this. And if he does move again, we're going to get money for it.
Yeah, I guess yes, I would go with the if it's a made up story part. That's good. I'm a little worried if he moves, Austin would get money for it, because like there's a lot of money floating around from moves that have not turned into actual players, and I'm starting to get a little bit nervous about it.
Yeah,
but you know, I think
they're gonna turn into players, right? Like you can't put Gam in your pocket. No, it will. You can't put Gam in your pocket. Like Anthony Precourt cannot cash out in Gam and put it into his pocket and spend it on a private jet. Like you have to use Gam on players. That's the only use it has. And so
I agree with that. Players are coming.
Yeah. You didn't trade Nick Lima to like personally profit. Like that money can only be used on MLS players. And so it's, yeah, I understand the frustration, but there's going to be signings.
My specific nervousness about this is Obregon so far is, I mean, there's not been a lot of offseason signings, but of the offseason signings, he's like the one player that definitely makes Austin FC better. Yeah. To then like take the one guy we brought in who makes the team better and ship him back out would be distressing.
Yeah, totally agree on that.
My specific position on this one move. All right. We got Johan Romagna is officially out. I feel like we talked about him several weeks in a row. For a while, it seemed like he was going to go back to Olympia. So now he's going to
San Lorenzo in Argentina. And that was
San Lorenzo, that's right.
The other one rumored there. And so that's been announced by the club. He's going to be there through 2024, which
we believe to be the end of his deal?
The end of his contract. So what Hernan is reporting, and I read a couple of other places, is that this is a little bit confusing. They're reporting a $200,000 loan fee, which generally what that parlance means is that the team that the player is being loaned to is paying a fee like you would a transfer fee to the home club. And so if this is right, it means San Lorenzo is paying $200,000 to Austin FC for the loan of Johan Romagna. If that's true, that's huge, right? Like, this is a guy we're thinking like probably paying part of his salary in another league. If they're paying a fee, I would guess that means they're paying most of, if not all of, his salary as well. Like, for a guy that we're actively trying to get rid of, that seems like a good deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Any way to turn Romagna into an asset is a good deal for Austin FC. Just because, like you said, which you said many times, like, not paying a guy $400,000 to be your fourth center back is a net benefit in and of itself, but you're also able to accumulate a little cash out of it. That's even better.
Yeah. And kind of tied into this is a question from Brian Ehrenreich. And he asks, what happens to the money if we sell a player for a significant transfer fee? Jeremiah, did you do homework on this one?
I did not. Did you?
I did a little bit, but I'm okay. Doing it off the dome now.
I'm afraid I'm going to get it wrong.
So the reason it's applicable here is because it applies to loan fees as well. So if you sell or loan a player for a fee, that fee can be turned into allocation money at the rate of 95%. So it used to be 25% of that would go to the league and 75% would go to the team. That changed in the last CBA. It's now 95% goes to the team, 5% goes to the league after out-of-pocket costs have been recouped. And this is the part that I don't understand. It has something to do with like amortized transfer fees being calculated into it, but I'm probably overcomplicating it, but I don't fully understand what the recouping out-of-pocket cost part means.
I do not believe that you're overcomplicating it, but I also believe that we will never understand it. So we should probably just
any
leave.
Listeners, if you think you understand it, please reach out and let us know, because I don't get that part. But in theory, you can turn 95% of a sale up to, I can't remember, it's like 1.5 million or 1 point something million that you can turn into allocation money of after a sale. Of homegrowns, it's 100% of that. And so, yeah, whenever you sell players, you can turn it into allocation money, which is, I mean, LAFC has done a good job of this, turning selling young players into being able to afford more players and more expensive players the next season. So it's not 100% going back towards the team, but what doesn't can go towards academy, go towards facilities, go towards coaching staff, go towards front office and things like that. So you can put it towards the team in some form or another, but a good chunk of it can be put into the actual players.
Well, I feel like another person we've talked a lot about over the last few weeks is Danny Pereira. So we have this again, I think largely from We're Awesome TV and Hernan, sort of rumors that people were offering $1 million in GAM for Danny, and Austin didn't think that was enough. And then Austin wanted $4 million in GAM for Danny, which is seems like a lot. And I think this is true. Paul Arriola, and was that last year, went for $2 million in GAM?
That's right. And that
or
is
was
still
it 2022 or was it 2023?
It was before the 2022 season.
Okay. So it's still the record for GAM. So like, it seems unlikely that Danny would be worth twice the most amount of GAM ever given. Also, it seems like it would be awesome if somebody wants to pay that to Austin for Danny, because that's like five more players that you could bring in. I guess why should people care about this rumor?
I think there was concern that Danny was going to be dealt for below what Austin fans consider market value. I think this is a heartening rumor. not sure how true any of it is, but it's a heartening rumor in that the numbers are high. Like if he's going to go, it seems like the number is going to be high. I think 4 million is unbelievable. Like, I don't think that could even be true, just because, like, again, Paul Ariola was the record with 2 million, but also, like, what team has that much just floating around? Like, with the limits, like, it's hard to imagine a team that even has 4 million free.
Yeah, it would have to be somebody. Well, Colorado would have been my first guess about somebody that might be sitting on that much GAM, and they've been super busy during this window. So, like, I feel like even if anybody would, like, would maybe be in that position, it's not them.
Yeah, but I mean, I think like a million in GAM is probably a decent rate for Danny Parera. If we could get more than that, great. But I think a million is probably the lowest number that I would still be happy about. So I mean, I don't want to see Danny go, but if he's gonna go, I want it to be for a good price.
So do you think that Danny Parera at $1 million in GAM is still selling on potential?
Or yeah,
selling on because that's really, I mean, the big question is, like, at what point in time does it make it sense to sell a player when obviously it's going to hurt a club on the field in the moment, but there's like a number where, like, long term it makes sense.
Yeah, I think you factor in like current output versus potential, but you also have to think about the rest of his contract. I think it was Football Critic who was reporting that there's possibly two option years on the contract. So we know this year was exercised. If this is the last year on his contract, if there is not a second option year, right now is absolutely a good time to sell Danny Parera. Like, just because the closer you get to the end of the contract, the more likely a player is just going to say, I'm just going to sit it out and then I'll just go wherever I want at the end of my contract.
Right. Cause you have more authority or more control over your own decisions at that point. Right.
Right. If there is a second option year, yeah, there's no pressure. Like, we'll just exercise that and then maybe re-up his contract next year or sell him next year. But if this is the last guaranteed year on his contract and we don't have that other option year, now, if there is a good offer, now is a pretty good time to cash in on that.
Right, and one other piece of player news rumors that we continue to see through people's social media posts is this rumor that Cheick Touré may be coming back. And I didn't remember until we saw this story that that his deal was only through the end of 2023. And so, like, having him back in 2024, both for the first team and the second team, seems like a positive. Like, is this a possible depth piece for the first team? Or do you see this being, like, just a completely Austin FC 2 move?
So first of all, I think the only thing that we saw in there was that he was on a KLM flight going somewhere, right?
He was on a KLM flight going somewhere from the Netherlands, which seems to, this is a Seth point, which I guess we'll get into in a minute. But, like, I think believe Seth Rao pointed out that it was like a KLM flight that aligned with the Amsterdam to Austin flight schedule based upon the time it was posted.
Yeah. So the direct flight is a KLM flight, but I would guess like 80% of flights from any Netherlands airport is going to be a KLM flight. So I would like to hope he's coming back to Austin. At the very least, he's a good Austin FC 2 piece, but I know for a fact that he missed out starting an Austin FC 2 game last season along with Joe Hafferty because he had been training on the first team schedule all week. And so it's a guy that the first team sees as, at least last season, saw as a potential option to help the first team. And so I think he'll get a shot. If he is indeed headed to Austin, I think he'll get a shot in preseason camp to win a supplemental spot. He will necessitate an international roster spot. I think that might be one of the biggest hurdles to him getting a supplemental roster spot with Austin FC, because if they, whatever signings they make between now and the end of this winter transfer window, spring transfer window, as late as it goes, if they think they're going to need an international roster spot for whatever plans they have for the summer, and Cheick Touré is going to take up that last one, he might be odd man out and not get that contract. But as far as talent goes, I think he could pretty easily slot into one of those supplemental roster spots if there's room for him and, like, other people aren't taking those plans. He over the course of last season, very clearly like a talented attacking fullback. He also improved immensely over the course of that season defensively. And so I don't know that he's a guy who's going to come in and play a ton of meaningful minutes for Austin FC this season, but I could very easily see him being just a depth piece on the bench.
Yeah. And you think it's nothing more than that. I forgot about the international part of that, but that does make a lot of sense in terms of the slots hold value. And so you really have to make sure that he's going to be worth it in order to bring him in that position. So we've touched a little bit with talking about him and Romagna and Danny and various things on sort of the depth of Austin FC. I believe there are 14 or 15 senior players right now and not a lot of players on the supplemental. So exactly how thin is Austin right now and should people be concerned about it? And I think we can point back to a post on Threads that somebody had done, went through and analyzed every team in the league and sort of how much work people had to do. And Austin seemed to be one that there's a lot of holes left on this first team. I guess there are a lot of holes left. There's a decent-ish starting 11 you can put together in a FIFA world where nobody gets hurt and nobody needs a week off.
Yeah.
But it's a super thin club.
Yeah, and this is the tweet you're mentioning is from Ben Wright, who I believe covers Nashville. But and looking at this, we talk about how difficult it is to cover every MLS team, and people who try often do silly things just because it's impossible to do it. He has CJ Fodre listed on the depth chart at left back, Valentin Noel in the depth chart as a number six. So there's some things that just don't make sense here. And I think he's very much using advanced metrics in a way that's not super helpful. But that being said,
the root point. Yeah. Yes, the root point is very true.
It's very true that this is a thin squad. We all knew that though, right? It's jarring to see it on paper, but it's not something we didn't already know. And so there is a lot of work to be done. And so this leads to a couple of listener questions. Martin Peterson asks, do you have any semi-credible and or hopefully plausible transfer info? The short answer is no.
No, not at all. I know. I feel like this is the least leaky player known point of time ever in terms of and we hear stuff sometimes it's has a very thin thread of credibility, and we don't even have that kind of information right now.
Yeah. Kevin Morris has posted a theory that a lot of the stuff we're seeing all these other teams making all these moves, and there are several moves that have been made official, but there's a lot of things who are Tom Bogert official, but aren't MLS press release official. And Austin FC was already a fairly leak-free team as far as transfer stuff goes. And so I think there's a decent chance that there's already some moves being underway and either done or to the same level of some of these things that Bogert is reporting on that he just doesn't know about yet. And so I think that that is plausible, that there's just there are some things that are going on that we don't know about yet. Elliot Wynn asks, how many players can a team realistically sign in a year and still have a winning season? It seems like every player takes a few months to get acclimated to the team's new style, or are we just respecting a repeat of our first season? So the Houston Dynamo signed 16 players last winter and spring, and they went from finishing 13th in the West in 2022 to finishing fourth in the West in 2023. So they are living proof that it is possible to sign a ton of players in one season and have a successful season and be a good team. I wouldn't say it's the norm or that it's likely that that's going to happen.
A preferred route.
Yeah,
probably not, but it's a pot. It is a route. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, there are a lot of holes in this depth chart, but again, you can't put GAM in your pocket. This will be spent on players, whether it be now or in the summer. So looking at as far as being ahead or behind of schedule, there are a few teams in the league who have more holes to fill than us and who have made the same or fewer moves incoming than us at this point in time. So I think even now it's not panic mode yet. It's when do players report to camp? It's the on 13th. January 13th and then first day of January practice. 13th,
but then
the
Monday
15th.
The 15th is, yeah, 15th is when they actually start practicing.
I think from the 15th is when the clock starts ticking, where it's like, okay, you could call us technically behind at that point. It's like they're missing out on preseason. They're missing out on training with their teammates. That's when you can start saying we're behind. And so if we see moves this week, I'd say that's still ahead of schedule. And then, but like just looking at empirical evidence, like there will be moves made through the roster freeze deadline, right? Like, and that's going to be in, do you know what the date is? Have they released that? It's probably going to be like in April, right?
It's late April. I don't remember exactly what it is, but yeah. And I mean, a lot of moves get made between when players report to camp and when the season starts too, especially with like given the heavy like February schedule. You could bring a guy in on February 1st or 5th or whatever, and there's going to be enough game time and practice time to integrate them. So it's Austin's definitely not ahead of schedule, but it's not terrifying other than the fact that Austin seems to have so many holes to fill. Yeah. So I know Kevin had also posted like the LAFC offseason where there are way more players out than in, but LAFC is coming from a very different place than Austin is in terms of like where their roster build is.
Yeah, looking at like the depth chart. So I saw Matt Doyle putting out his depth chart and then I was like, okay, I'm going to try to do this for Austin, but realizing that I've tried to do this before and putting together a depth chart for Austin FC is so difficult anyway, just because if you swap in one player, it could like mirror image the formation or completely change the formation. And so putting together a graphic of an actual depth chart is really hard to do for that reason, like ranking players in a single formation, because like, okay, if this player's in, it's this formation, but if this player's in, it's a different formation. And it makes it really difficult to put together. And so I understand why MLSsoccer.com always just goes with the 4-2-3-1, just because it simplifies things.
It's easiest, yeah.
Even though we never play that, it's just easier to to put it on a screen totally. That way. But one thing that I was thinking of a few weeks ago, and not long before we started recording, a tweet came in from Rocky Perez saying, wild prediction, maybe not too wild, but I think we will see Owen Wolf at right back. This is something that I had actually been thinking about. So thinking about how Pep Guardiola has used guys like John Stones and Alexander Zinchenko when he was still playing with Manchester City in these hybrid defender roles where a fullback or a center back is kind of stepping into midfield and playing as a midfielder. And Zinchenko's doing that in Arsenal now as well. Nick Lima wasn't the player to do that. He wasn't the right profile to be that guy for Austin FC. But with Owen Wolf's skill on the ball in the midfield and his athleticism, maybe he is the right guy to be that player. So I'm not calling that it's going to happen, but I wouldn't be that surprised if there was an Owen Wolf transformation to one of those like flex right backs who moves into the midfield.
I mean, it almost seems, just given the lack of depth at fullback, it seems like even more desirable now, because I mean, even the roster now depends a lot upon like Sean Kolbinich being completely healthy and back to the same player that he was at the start of 2023. So like, yeah, I can see some creativity. I'm interested to see like where, you know, Owen's development, where he ultimately ends up. Also great to see he got sort of a gangster like grown up haircut today. I don't know if you like saw that on Instagram, but I feel like that's a really good like sign for 2024.
All right. Anything else we need to touch on before we move on, Jeremiah?
Not now. So I'm excited. We're going to be joined in the next segment by Seth Rao, who is sort of like just a constant factor in the Austin FC fan community. I'm really into the travel and sort of the away days. And so it's going to be our chance to sort of talk through the schedule. And for those of you that are interested, which I would highly encourage anybody to do, if you're interested in like going on an away day and like experiencing Austin FC fan on the road, like listen to this interview with Seth and you'll understand why it's kind of a cool deal.
All right. We'll be right back with Seth Rao. When no one is around. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FVF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FVF is a different kind of law firm committed to community, transparency, and client education.
You can go to FVF.law to find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's FVF.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that served the needs of Central Texans for over five decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average of $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to six Austin FC game tickets per person per year. You'll pay none of those bank fees with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower.
Our premier sponsor, McGuire Woods Consulting, helps companies and nonprofits navigate the political process wherever that might be. At the Capitol in Austin, in the city of Austin, probably also in Washington, D.C., through lobbying, communication strategies, and general advocacy.
With offices across the country and in 10 MLS cities, including Austin, Houston, and Dallas, McGuire Woods Consulting is solidly Verde and Black. Learn more about our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at MWCLLC.com. All right. We are thrilled to be joined today by Seth Rao. Seth, thanks so much for joining us, man.
My pleasure to be back here on Moon Tower.
So I know you've been on before. We've mentioned your name a few times. I think people who are involved in any real way in like supporter culture or anything like that probably have seen your name somewhere. But I think a lot of our listeners might not know who you are, except for us saying your name every once in a while. So just give like a brief summary of what you do in Austin FC circles.
Hey, again, my name is Seth Rao. I'm the random Austin FC fan who lives in Chicago, still former Austin resident, still Travis County property taxpayer. But I help arrange away travel for our fans all across the country and occasionally outside of the country with our lovely by country league and sometimes even in CCC or CCL, maybe even beyond those borders. And I work with Los Verdes, with Anthem, with Merga, with Facebook groups, with anyone else who wants to support our boys wherever they travel to make sure that we can have a loud, proud away section wherever we go.
You're also one of the people who just like in this community who just knows things. Well, partially because you just like, you know, people and you hear things, but also you're a person who just remembers everything you ever hear, it seems like. And so I know Jeremiah and I have a reputation of like knowing MLS rules really well and kind of being on the nerdier end of that spectrum. But I will say I've gotten to a point where if there's some weird Austin FC thing that comes up where there's some bizarre roster rule that's at play and I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to explain this on the show or answer questions about it on Twitter, I will, before I get started on my research, I'm going to go to Los Verdes Slack and see like, okay, has Seth explained this to everybody yet? And if you haven't, then I'll start working on it. But if you have, I'm just going to read what Seth says and then go with that.
No, I mean, I do a lot of my own research on things, talk to people, be part of conversations, but also the internet is my friend. And occasionally I'm wrong. I'm not perfect, but I try to understand this crazy entity as much as I can.
Before we get into it, the one thing I wanted to ask is like, have you always been in this crazy entity or was that a part of your like Austin journey or?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, I've been an MLS fan before. I mean, the first MLS game I went to was as a high school student at the now known as the historic Columbus Crew Stadium, because that was the closest team growing up in the Cincinnati area. But like, I mean, I had a Crew jersey. I wasn't like a huge Crew fan or anything, but like they were the team that was around. But like as in anything on that side, but like I wasn't a huge MLS fan. When I was in college, I went to college at Tufts University up in the Boston area. I had a one of the guys who lived on my floor freshman year worked for interned for the league for a couple seasons. So we would get free tickets to New England Revolution games. So I went to a bunch of Revs games in college. And then as I've lived all over the country since then, I've started traveling around even before Austin FC. Like I was the person who did a week road trip where I went to a game in Portland, Seattle, and Vancouver in 8 days in 2018, just because like I thought that would be a fun thing to do. I've now been to 26 of the current 29 MLS stadiums. And I've been to Yankee Stadium for baseball, but not for soccer, so I don't count that. And hopefully I will finish that this year. Actually, it's a good segue into the schedule. We actually only play at one of the three teams where I have not been to an away game of, and that's Nashville. And I haven't been to Geodis Park, where I know some of you guys got to go down there in 2022, but I had something that weekend, so I wasn't able to make it down. But I will be making it down to Nashville unless something weird pops up at the end of August for our match down there, which I'm excited for.
Yeah, so that is why we have you on here today, is to talk about the schedule. I think it came out on the 20th. We have not recorded a regular episode since then, so we wanted to take some time and dedicate it to the schedule. So looking at, I know like a big thing when the schedule comes out is fans looking at the Eastern Conference opponents, because that's like, I guess new options for away travel, and then just like playing teams that some of which we've never played in a real competition, right? So this season, the Eastern Conference teams are Philadelphia, NYCFC, Charlotte, who we've played before, and then we'll be traveling to, those are all at home, we'll be traveling to Orlando, Nashville, and Toronto. So looking at these and kind of the other away days, what are you seeing as being the biggest away days for fans to travel to this season?
So our Texas away days are always our biggest in terms of attendance, just because people can hop on a bus that the front office provides. They arrange tickets for that, and usually the bus is only $10 more, so it's a pretty affordable way to get to games. We usually have a couple hundred people coming to each of those games, if not more. In Houston, we can really bring as many people as we want because that stadium is almost never full. In Dallas, I actually have to give them credit. Like it's very un-PC of me in Austin FC circles to give Frisco / FC Dallas credit for things, but their stadium is a lot more full than it used to be, and they actually have been limiting our ticket allocation. So we did sell out the ticket allocation for the game up there this past year, and we go up there twice this year. And this is the first time in our four-season history that we have a weekday away game in Texas, which is its own interesting thing. So I'll be curious to see how many people make it up to Frisco on a Wednesday night in July.
What about the Eastern Conference ones? Is there any of those that have kind of stood out as far as folks showing interest in traveling?
So Nashville is the closest Eastern Conference opponent to us. Like if MLS ever went into a 3 or 4 conference world, it's very likely that Austin and Nashville would be in the same conference rather than in this 2 conference setup that we have right now. It's a place that people can drive to, and it's still a pretty new stadium, and it's a fun city, and it's not on Labor Day weekend this year. So we actually just got a hotel block. So if you're in Los Verdes Anthem, or honestly in the show notes, we could post the link to where all of the spreadsheet that we're tracking everything is on that front. And Landon and Jeremiah, it's pinned up to the team away day tab. So if you're in Los Verdes Slack, if you go to the team away day channel, that you can see up in the caption is a spreadsheet where we track all the prices, all the details for all the matches. And if we get a hotel block for that, we show that up there as well. So, and that information is also available to people outside of Los Verdes. It's not an exclusive LV thing. This is very much war raging travel for the entire community. So expect Nashville to be pretty popular. Orlando is going to be a little complicated because it is over spring break period. So there's just a lot of people that like taking their kids to Disney and Universal over spring break. So it is not a very cheap trip. And Toronto is already pretty expensive, and it's during the Toronto International Film Festival. So like it is going to be fairly expensive on that front. But like, I don't know, it's not a very far flight for me. So I will definitely be going to Toronto. I got my hotel points booked out for it. So I'm looking forward to going up to BMO Field.
Yeah, I was hoping to go to Toronto, and I did not know that. So thank you for telling me.
Yeah, so I will say, like, if you have hotel points, it's doable. Flights, there are direct flights on Air Canada now from Austin to Toronto. It's not horrendously expensive for the flights, but the hotels are more expensive than they should be due to the film festival. Yep.
But any listeners who aren't in a supporters group or don't know how to find any of the stuff he's mentioning, we'll try to post that in the show notes. But also just reach out to us, and we'll be happy to connect you with someone. But away days are fun. So if you haven't been to one, you should try to do it.
Yeah, and you can always just shoot us an email at travel@losverdesatx.org or honestly, my personal info is pretty available and they could put it in the show notes. Like, I don't mind people shooting me personal messages on this kind of stuff because we're always trying to build out a larger community of Austin FC fans wherever you are. And the beauty of away travel is you don't actually have to be Austin based. We have people who are Southern California based that are arranging WhatsApp groups for the trip out to the Coachella Valley Invitational in preseason next month. Like, we have people that are all over the place that are supporting a team that's still pretty new, and that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited. We'll do Nashville again, I think, Landon. We did that in 2022 together, and one of the things I loved is we didn't have to worry about like anybody's like sleep habits or routines or anything like that before. But I would say like you're a pretty good travel partner and roommate, so like I'm ready to do that again in August. Yeah. Although I may have to bring Jackson Bentley too, so there may be three of us.
Well, we got a suite hotel, so you can actually, I don't know. I don't think Jackson Bentley might be able to fit on a sofa bed anymore for the stories I hear about Jackson Bentley these days. But that is a Bentley household decision there. I will say a trip that I am highlighting that I think is going to be really cool, that is one that people might be overlooking, is that June 29th, we play at Sporting Kansas City, which like, okay, we play at Sporting KC every year. 2 days later, the U.S. men's national team plays Uruguay in the Copa America at Arrowhead Stadium. So I am looking into doing that doubleheader, which would be kind of fun.
Yeah, nice. We're going to be kind of sprinkling in listener questions throughout this show. And so we have some about the regular season. But before we get to that, I want to start off with preseason schedule. We kind of have all of that. I think that's pretty much fleshed out.
No, it's good. We shouldn't
see anything else added at this point, right?
No, probably. Everything is, I mean, there might be like some weird closed door friendly that they play against like UTSA or something for like FC Till or things like that. But yeah, it sounds like we're going down to Florida. So players report for physicals on Saturday. Then first practice is on the 15th. And that should be a fun moment, at least getting the press out there, maybe even some fans out there. We'll see how that all comes together. And then they're going to go down to Florida, play the Philadelphia Union, play FC Cincinnati, come back to Austin for a little bit, play a Saturday Verde Hill closed door scrimmage against Louisville City, and then go out to Coachella where they're going to play three matches over there, then play NYCFC back in Austin the week before the regular season starts.
Yeah, so that brings up our first listener question. It's funny to call this person a listener because it's Phil West.
Okay,
submitting this one. But his question is, any tips for people doing Verde Hill for the first time? So Seth, what is Verde Hill and what would you tell people who have never been out there?
So weird confession, I've actually never been to a match on Verde Hill.
Oh, okay.
That it is the first season, like I had things that were going on and that I haven't lived in Austin the last two seasons. So but Verde Hill is at the St. David's Performance Center, like which people, I mean, if you've been to an FC Till match, you've been over there because it's the complex is right next to the pitch there and everything else. That there are a couple of hilled embankments which allow for people to watch the preseason matches. And usually La Murga and other fans show up sort of as a fan practice, but also just to show the guys, even though they are technically closed door scrimmages. And like, these are like the seats, the standing positions on Verde Hill are further away than most of the seats at Q2 are. But at the point is, it's not even as much about watching the game. You can sort of get like large scale game flow from Verde Hill, but it's more of a way of just showing how do you build a sense of community? There is no cost barrier to this. There's no chance of it selling out. Like you just show up on the hill and you watch the guys go out there. There might be some trialists. There might be some new players. You have no idea kind of what you're going to see. And that's part of the fun of it.
Yeah. As I said, last off season,
you've done this, right? You more than once?
Landon, oh, have you never been Jeremiah?
Yeah. I've only been once.
Okay. Yeah, I've done it a few times. But as I said last season, there's no such thing as a closed door game whenever our hill is taller than your door.
Yeah.
I love that.
So if people want to really get into this, like if you want to go to away travel sicko level, the two games that we are playing in St. Petersburg on the 23rd and 26th of this month are being played at Al Lang Stadium, which is, I've been by there, but I've never actually been in there. It's an old minor league baseball stadium that's become the Tampa Bay Rowdies USL Stadium. And even though it is closed door there, there is a hotel that perfectly overlooks the field. So if someone wants to get on to real sicko level and like go put a camera up there and go watch the game that way, like be my guest at this point. But I'm just throwing that out there.
I love it.
Yeah, if you do that, report back to us. We would love to hear that. I wanted to one thing you mentioned, and I think it's like a developed enough thing, Seth, that we could talk about it, is on the 15th, which is the first day of practice, I think there's a relatively organized outing. So if you yes. want, it's going to be cold. But well, maybe,
I don't know
happens,
when the cold front's coming through or not. Yeah. Like projecting cold fronts in Texas is a dangerous business. But sure. there's but yeah,
yeah. I think our plan is to go. Jackson and I plan to be there on the 15th to like welcome the team in and sort of be part of that show of force for being excited about 2024.
Yeah, no, we like last season. The end of last season was tough, and getting through that and just being like, okay, we might not know who's going to be on this team. There's a lot of missing gaps here, but like we still have guys out there. We still are going to be competitive this season. Like, let's show that and get there at 8:30, 9 in the morning in the parking lot and just follow the noise and go from there.
All right, let's move into regular season schedule talk. So this is another listener question from Alex Mod. And he asks, if you break the schedule into quarters, which quarter presents the most challenge? And take quarters as loosely or firmly as you want to. But like, what section of the season is going to be hardest?
I like Alex as a person, and I like the premise of the question. I'm not going to directly answer the question because if you claim that you know who's going to be good in MLS before a season starts, you are lying to yourself. Because we all projected that St. Louis City was going to win the West last year.
Last in the West.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like, no one thought they were going to win the West. Like, oh my, I mean, that loss still looks really bad, that season of the Colossal last year, but like, that looks bad because of what happened during the match, not what happened in the remaining 33 games for each of the teams. So I think it's like, yeah, we open up against Minnesota, who has their second interim coach of this offseason right now. Like, that's a kind of wild statement. But like, I don't know. Like, okay, Reynoso could have an amazing preseason and they could beat us 3-0. Like, we got 6 points off of Minnesota last year. And do I think we're going to get 6 points off of them again this year? No. But like, this league, like, oh, Philly's always going to be good. Like, that's a tough game in March, but it's at home. They never played in Austin before. Like, they don't like this league on a week-to-week basis is something that is so hard to predict that you'll only be able to answer that question after the season. And I just think that anyone who claims they can accurately predict MLS, like, I would love to see their betting receipts to prove that they made money on it.
I approach this question slightly differently and not looking at our opponents necessarily, but just like what is happening in the season then. And so if you look at the mid-June to mid-July portion of the season, you have several home games in Austin, which are probably going to be very hot. You also have Copa America going on. You have the Euros going on. And so Austin could potentially be missing Danny Pereira, Leo Weissen, and Julio Cascante to international duty during that stretch. And then who knows, like, if there's going to be signings eventually this season, who knows if any of those guys will be on international duty then. Could be missing players and then playing in the heat with like match congestion, trying to get ready for those tournaments and for Leagues Cup. I think that stretch could be difficult.
But also let's throw it the other way around there. Like, who is going to be on there? So like, we go to Minnesota in that stretch. Like, okay, if Finland qualifies, okay. Is losing Leo Väisänen versus losing Timo Pukki for Minnesota a bigger loss there? Like,
yeah,
these other
true.
Teams are going to be facing a lot of these same issues. So like, it is, as one of the nice things is, as MLS grows as a league, we have more players playing in Copa America. We have more players playing in the Euros. So like, it's not just an Austin FC specific issue. On Venezuela, like, Danny hasn't actually, I hope Danny makes the Copa America roster, but Danny hasn't made a full Venezuela side yet. He has made a U.S. exhibition side. He's made a U23 side. Costa Rica has not qualified for Copa America yet, and it's hardly a guarantee that Julio would get called up. Leo has been in and out of the Finnish side. Finland has to win 2 matches to go qualify for Euro 24, so it's not a guarantee that Finland's going to make it to that tournament. So there's a lot of those questions that we just don't know the answer to. And like, let's face it, our not-so-nice friend, the groin demon, will probably strike again. Like, we need to build up depth here. We need to build up a team here. And like, yes, I think that is an obvious place to look for a harder part of the schedule, but every team's going to be impacted differently.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Let's go to a Trevor Allison question. It's about the schedule, because I think this is one that's super interesting. Is basically, it looks like we've, with the Apple TV deal, right, we had like the upside was predictability and like the downside was every game was happening at the same time, which for if you want to like watch soccer all day, it was like not a great experience. So it seems like some of those overlapping match problems are dealt with. Like what's your ideal format? Do you do like the Premier League where you have like some primetime games? Do you go NFL? Like what kind of schedule would you like to see?
So I have to look at this under two lenses here. Do I look at this as someone who attends matches in stadiums, or do I look at this as someone who's primarily a TV viewer? And I think the healthy medium of this is, and MLS is doing a better job in 2024 than they did in 2023. Like I looked at the, living in Chicago, I looked at the Chicago Fire schedule. The Fire have a 1 p.m. March 16th home game. Their March 23rd game in New England is also a daytime game. Maybe playing daytime games in cold climates in March is a good idea. What a novel idea. Like they might not be the sexiest matchups. Like I can't think of that many people that are like, oh my God, I desperately want to see the Chicago Fire play at the New England Revolution. But like, hey, Austin fans might want to see Nick Lima, I guess, play a little bit. And like, okay, we're not playing until 6:30 that night. And that game is on at 1 o'clock. Okay, we'll go watch 30 minutes to see what Nick Lima will do over here. But like, there's a, I wish that I would have it set up as a, I don't know if I like a Friday night game because that gets really hard for traveling purposes, but I know for the TV viewer in me would like a Friday night game. I would love a guaranteed like 4:30 p.m. Eastern time slot game, that like 3:30 Central game, maybe one or two games in that slot, then do a majority of the games there and then do a double header every Sunday and maybe a Monday night game or even two Monday night games before NFL returns.
Yeah, I like, so what we're actually getting this year seems to be the majority of the game still happening all at the same time, as similar times, like 7:30 local time, but then with usually like two games happening earlier in the day and then maybe a game or two happening the afternoon, the day after. For my own selfish purposes, I actually really like this schedule because I'm not going to watch MLS all day, but I would like to watch like one or two games that aren't the Austin game in a given week. And this is going to give me the opportunity to do that while, having an excuse not to watch every game because they're going to be happening at the same time as the Austin one.
Another thing I wanted to point out here, maybe this is getting too far in the weeds, but it is really weird to me that we have the exact same four games, and not even just opponents, home and away, that are the same for national TV broadcasts as we did last year.
Oh, wow.
And I noticed this on the Fire. I haven't looked through all 29 teams. I've looked through Austin and I've looked through the Fire, and their one national TV game is against the same opponent and it's in the same location as it was last year. So did MLS just pick all of the same national TV games for Fox and FS1 in 23 and 24? That's I do need to do a little more research before I definitively claim that, but it's an interesting sample size there.
Yeah, that's wild.
And for the people who are curious on the Austin end, it's our home games are the LA Galaxy in Portland, and away is LAFC in St. Louis.
All right, well, let's speculate now. It's my favorite part of any kind of conversation. So if Austin FC gets off to a bad start, which, like you said, Seth, is not terribly predictable based upon the way that what we know or don't know about this league, like how early... What is the earliest you guys think we might have a coaching change?
Ooh.
If things go poorly, which as someone who depends upon people being excited about Austin FC, like winning and people being excited is like, it's not in my self-interest for Austin to suck. But if we do, like, what do you guys see happening?
I would love, in my mind, like if the team is doing poorly and like we have another loss to like San Antonio FC or El Paso or something in the Open Cup, for that to be a reason for our coach to get sacked. But that's probably a Seth issue, it did happen in Vancouver a couple years ago where their coach got sacked for losing to a provincial team in the Canadian Championship. So like these things do occasionally happen in MLS. But I think that would be by like mid-April would be a sign of like if this team is still at single-digit points by near the end of April, like I think that would be a reason for a sacking. But I also think Anthony Precourt is someone who believes in Josh Wolf and will find a litany of excuses, especially if we can only end up with two real senior roster spots unoccupied. But if we are saving up a bunch of things until the summer, I see it as unlikely that we'd make a coaching change until we'd make some more of the big summer transfer moves that have been rumored by Roto and others.
What do you think, Landon?
Yeah, I just don't know. I don't know how quickly Precourt will be willing to pull the trigger, either for like loyalty purposes or for money purposes. Because when is Wolf's contract up?
2025. Well,
he just signed an extension.
So he still has two full seasons on it. So I think for that reason alone, like Precourt's probably not going to want to fire him, because then you're paying two coaches at once, essentially.
Unless you decide, yeah.
But you have a coach in house.
That's right.
Coaches in house.
Yeah.
So you could move up Davey Arnaud already on the staff to coach, or let's revive a rumor that was floating around whenever Rodolfo Borrell got hired, that the plan was for him to kind of be the sporting director until they decided to fire Wolf, and then he would step in as the coach. Borrell outright denied that. Like, the question was asked in that initial press conference. He said, no, I reached a crossroads. I need to decide if I'm going to go like the front office path or the coaching path. And I've made my decision. This is what I'm doing now. He said it very bluntly, but I had two different people in like national MLS media circles tell me 2 days apart that this rumor is still around, that they're hearing that Rodolfo Borrell could very possibly be the coach of Austin FC by the end of 2024. And that sounds crazy to me. And so it is a rumor that's going around MLS circles. I've reached out to other people who I trust and are also very knowledgeable in MLS circles, and they don't buy it. But it is out there, so it's coming from somewhere.
I mean, on the one hand, I don't want him to be the interim coach, because that means that we'll have done really poorly this season to get to that point. So, like, I watched enough agony last season. And don't get me wrong, I grew up in Cincinnati. I'm used to my teams being terrible, or when they're good, they find ways to lose in absolutely heartbreaking, excruciating fashion. So, like, the level of pain this past offseason was like, this past season for Austin FC was like, okay, this is like pretty normal. To some people, it did not feel normal. But I'm like, welcome to sports fandom. Sometimes your team just isn't very good.
Yeah, Real Madrid fan, sometimes your teams are just bad.
And it's just as a person who's never been the Lakers, Yankees, I don't want to throw your Cowboys in there, Jeremiah, but I feel like Cowboys fans have the attitude, even if you guys haven't won a Super Bowl in almost 30 years. But it is still like, it's getting to this like sense of entitlement. I'm not entitled to anything. Like, the Western Conference Finals run in 2022 was awesome and magical. But like, we're not entitled to that every year. Would I love to be at the level of consistency where we are that good? Of course. But like, it's going to take time here. And like, yes, if we get to a point here where he deserves to be like, yeah, I'd have no issue moving on to Roto as a coach. I think he'd be the best available option. There's no one really in MLS who has anywhere near his experience coaching in Europe as he brings. And yeah, I would be interested to see, could he pull off the Peter Vermes and do both jobs like Josh Wolf had to do for a bit last season? I don't know.
And then we know he didn't really like too.
Yes. Well, it's also like, Josh Wolf wasn't prepared to do that. Like, Josh Wolf has been training to be a coach. He hasn't been training to be a sporting director. I'm like, that's just a really different skill set. And I don't know who was actually making a lot of those decisions, but we didn't handle last year very well from the sporting director front, from all that I can see.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, in a vacuum, if you said, like, this guy who was Pep Guardiola's right-hand man for a while and has this resume that he has, if he's going to be your next coach, it's like, yeah, that sounds pretty good, but the way that it comes, that it would come about, like, it seems so strange. Like, if that's the plan, if that has always been the plan for him to eventually become the coach, why not just do that? Like, and so that's the part of
you had the perfect window last year to do this,
right? And that's the part of me that's like, if that is the plan, I think it has to do at least partially, if not entirely, with money, like not wanting to pay Wolf out for the rest of his contract. But The whole thing is very strange. Like if there's any bit of truth to any of this, it's really weird. And so even though it might end us up with a really highly qualified and really good coach, like it's probably not going to be a good time in Austin leading up to that point.
All right. So let's just, that's very true. Let's hope it doesn't happen. So let's move on from that and go to like one more like piece of news I think you have interest in, Seth. And it's, we might not have referees or professional for everybody that hates the refereeing in Major League Soccer. Imagine that that level of professional was not available to you at the start of the season. And you had to go for like backups to those officials. So like, you want to cover like quickly sort of this potential referee strike and what that might mean for the league?
Yeah, so like in every American professional league, the referees are unionized. We might remember in the NFL a few years ago, the referees went on strike, and there was an infamous Packers-Seahawks game where the game ended in a Hail Mary, where you had one referee signaling that it was a touchdown and what the next referee standing next to them signaling an incomplete pass. I feel like we could have that in MLS. I'm trying to think of the equivalent of that. I mean, we already don't know what a goal is in MLS because we don't have goal line technology. But as we're going to this, that the referees' collective bargaining agreement expires next Monday, and it sounds like they're not going to be able to reach an agreement right now. Pro was set up as a collaborative between Major League Soccer and the United States Soccer Federation to provide referees, not just for MLS, but also for the U.S. Open Cup and other competitions that are run by U.S. Soccer. U.S. Soccer has been running through some budget challenges in recent years and decided to cut their $2 million allocation to Pro. Well, that is obviously not all of their money there, that it's very hard if you're going into a collective bargaining cycle and suddenly your revenues that you're dropping by $2 million and you have increased expenses as the cost of flying gets more expensive, as refs with inflation and everything else want a pay raise like any labor union would. It's how do you sort out these balances? And it sounds like they're very far apart from an agreement right now. And I don't know how they're going to be able to get this done in time for February 24th.
Yeah, I would say like whenever this was put out, I think it's Pablo Maurer and maybe Paul Tenorio reporting on this initially, and responses saying like, "Oh, we're not. Will we even notice if they're not there?" It's like, "Yes, you absolutely will,
yeah, absolutely,
because of
absolutely.
The example Seth gave there." But regardless of what you think of the MLS refs, and I would argue that they're not as bad as most fans would let on that they are. But the alternatives will absolutely be worse. And just from like a pro labor stance, like there is money being made. I think the people doing the work should be the ones benefiting the most. And these refs are the ones doing it. And I would recommend people go and read, Pablo Maurer's article on The Athletic, where he shadowed the refereeing crew on the MLS Cup final. Really, really cool article where he's following Armando Villarreal and his team on that day. Just like what it looks like to be in that position and have that much pressure on you. And like you doing an excellent job means nobody noticing you, essentially. And so, yeah, I refs deserve to be treated like humans and like given respect. And I think this is an example where they are not being respected. And it like as humans, as laborers, they need respect, but also as far as like our teams being treated fairly and having good officiating on the field, we want this to get done.
So 3 points to make there. First of all, it's like our refs need to be protected. We had an incident in this MLS postseason in the FC Cincinnati New York Red Bulls game where Matt Miazga apparently went into the ref locker room with a pizza box and was looking for an utterly outrageous moment. But like, we couldn't even guarantee refs basic security to take a shower after a sweaty 90-minute match with PKs. Like, these jobs are not glorious jobs. And on the second point there is like, if you're Armando Villarreal and you're working MLS Cup, if you're working international matches, you're making six figures. You're making a decent salary. If you're the assistant VAR at a bunch of these matches, yeah, you travel to Salt Lake City might be covered. Congratulations on the Delta miles. But like, a lot of these guys are not making very much. Like, you start putting it together per match and it's maybe $200 a match for like some of the third officials, some of the assistant officials here. Like, it's like a lot of these wages, like I have to be in full disclosure, like I work in management that negotiates with labor in my day job. So like, I sometimes have to look at this through the lens of management. Like, do we have the funds to pay for this? And I mentioned earlier, the U.S. soccer pulling out $2 million, but you have the world's most famous soccer player in this league right now. You have a contract for $250 million a year with Apple right now. And there's not enough money to pay for this. There's also not enough money to pay for cameras. There's not enough money to, apparently Apple's going to be cutting back on some of their on-site broadcasting this year. Like, can we get a financial audit of what's going on in MLS right now? Like, I thought with Messi coming in the league, we would be exceeding our collective bargaining targets and that there'd actually be more money for player salaries. What's going on here? New York, can you give us some answers if they're listening to Moutard?
I don't think they are, but we would love it. Yes.
You don't think Don Garver listens to us regularly? All right. Well, Seth, thanks so much for joining us. Insightful and informative as ever as any conversation is with you, but really appreciate it. Hopefully we'll get to run into you on the road sometime this year.
Absolutely. And hopefully I'll make it down to a match or two in Austin as well. Just got to figure out all scheduling and all logistics, but I'm excited to see you guys again in person somewhere supporting our team.
All right. Thanks, bud.
Have a good
one. All right. Thanks, man. Bye. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Covert Ford. The Coverts have been meeting the needs of local car buyers for 114 years because of their service, financial expertise, and support after the sale.
In addition to supporting car buyers, Covert's an important part of the soccer community and the official automotive partner of Austin FC.
We want to talk to you about a 2023 Ford F-150 XLT stock number 2231529. You can get it for $13,107 off MSRP or 2.9% APR for 72 months. This is not compatible with any other offer. You have to have approved Ford credit. Not all buyers will qualify. It's subject to Texas residency restrictions, and you can check the website for all the details on the before and after prices and financing options.
If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, be sure to check out covertford.com.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. The Sage Wilson Realty team is made up of Austin experts who are client-focused and have over 30 years of combined real estate experience in the area.
If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. Okay, we are back. We're going to get through as many listener questions as we can. If we do not get to some of them, we will push them to next week, but we will get through all of them at some point. Let's start off with a question from Nicole Blair. Nicole asks, as we're looking for new players, do you think Josh Wolf has a good, bad, or average reputation as a coach to play for? And what advantages or disadvantages do you think they would see in playing under him? So in 2022, the MLS Players Association Players Voice Survey voted Josh Wolf as number one in the category coach they'd want to play for. They didn't do that category this year. They published these results last week, but I would guess he wouldn't be number one in that poll this year.
Well, I would guess that, but I feel like that's just a side effect of the poll. Because I imagine at that point in time, they're like, well, Austin's doing really good. And like, that was the dude who played in the league. And I know his name. So,
and they score a bunch of goals and play. And like,
they score
fun
a bunch of goals.
Soccer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get so to play with Giussi, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, there wasn't a lot of rigor in 2022 for him to be like first. So like, I don't know how much stock I put in that other than it was just like an effect, like you said, of the results and kind of how things were going.
What about the like advantages, disadvantages? Like what, if you're a player looking at coming to play for Austin FC, how do you think you're looking at playing for Josh Wolf at this point?
Well, you know, like being inside the locker room is my very favorite topic to speculate upon. This is the thing we know absolutely nothing about. I mean, I think the fact that, and we hear this repeatedly, and we heard this with the Burrell opening press conference. I think the fact that there is like a defined identity and that you know what you're getting into and there's systems you're going to play and a part of is probably an advantage of like coming and playing for Josh Wolf, right? You're not going to sign thinking that you're one thing and then suddenly things are going to change. Like, I think it's probably the biggest upside of being a player for Austin FC.
Yeah. Again, full speculation, but I posited in the last season that there's a type of player that Josh Wolf wants. I believe I called them Boy Scouts. But I also believe that probably the Boy Scouts are the ones who would probably be more likely to want to play for someone like Josh Wolf too, right? Like, I can't imagine there's many like play by your own rules, loose cannon type guys who are like, Josh Wolf's the guy who I want to play for.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's, that is one thing that we should probably, we should probably know for sure about the type of player that like Josh wants. Just hope there's enough of them in the league to build a successful team off that profile.
All right. Next question is from Alex Mod. Says, love the live show. Thanks for braving the cold to do it. Yeah, the sun quickly faded away, like dropped under the canopy of the stadium as we were setting up for that live show. So it did get quite cold. You could probably hear my jaw chattering a little bit if you listen close enough in the last recording. But the second part of Alex's question says, if Roto ever came on the show, what question would you ask him?
Well, because I want to say one thing about the show that we did mention earlier. I thought it was cool that this Barely Regal talked about that it was good to like hear the actual voices of listeners and people like that we've all known each other like online and through the community, but maybe not necessarily in person for the show, which was a good part of the show. So the Roto question, what question would I ask him? And like, what question do I think he would answer? Or probably two different things, but assuming I could ask him anything. I mean, I would really want to know how much he values Major League Soccer, like in terms of players. Because I've got a very like Eurocentric, you know, all the good players in the summer. I don't need a Sean Rubio kind of vibe from him. So I'd like really, if I thought that I could ask a question that I would get to the absolute bottom of, I'd be like, how much do you value this league, and how much does that play into like the decisions you make?
Yeah, that's a really good one. And this is a little bit of a peek behind the curtain here. When we're prepping for interviews or for press conferences, it's like picking not just the question you want to ask, but picking the question you think they'll answer and phrasing
right, which
it
I'm
in
saying
a way
is not. Yeah, yeah.
Phrasing it in a way that will actually get a response out of them. And so I feel like he's a guy who is more open than most Austin FC folks we've gotten in press conferences. I'd say he's way more open than Claudio ever was, more open than Josh is most of the time. And so to his credit, like he does give better answers than what we get most of the time. But at the same time, he's a smart guy, and he's not going to give you any information he doesn't want to give you. And so trying to frame those questions sometimes to like, what will you answer, and what, like, is that answer worth us airing? Like, that's always a tricky line to walk.
Yeah. So what's your question, Landon?
Oh, I don't know.
It's okay. Cool.
I think it would be, yeah, I think what I would want to ask is, it's not so different from yours, but if you could only add one player to this team for the 2024 season, what would be the profile of that player? I would want to know like how he sees the shortcomings of this team and what he thinks would have the biggest effect on this team this year. Hopefully that question gets answered with green smoke sometime soon.
Yeah.
But
hopefully that question gets answered by an actual player. Okay. Nicole Blair, if you ask different Austin FC players what needs to be fixed this season, how much overlap do you think there would be in their answers? I mean, I'm guessing, first of all, it's going to be everybody but me.
Yeah.
That's probably the first answer.
Yeah, I would think there would be quite a bit of overlap. If they're being honest, I think there'd be quite a bit of overlap. But to your point, players are unreliable narrators. And so whenever you hear players, like fans talking about, well, this player says his best position is this, or this player says that he didn't like this coach because he wasn't playing, it was like, well, no shit. Like, of course he wants to play. Or yeah, maybe Danny Pereira was an attacking midfielder in college, but like, it happens all the time that players get moved back. Wingers become fullbacks. Central midfielders become center backs. Like, that's just normal. And a player telling you different doesn't really mean anything. And so, if they were being honest, I think that they would say a lot of the same things, but I don't know how many of them would be honest.
Yeah, let's go to, how about Alex Mod? What's a realistic level of player you think Roto might sign in the summer? for big splash signing, assuming that is his plan?
I would say that he's probably not going to go after the big name. And so the realistic answer is a guy we've never heard of, but was like maybe a reserve player at Manchester City or like something like that. Like he doesn't seem like the, like they're not going to go after the Chicharitos and the Zlatans of the world. I think it's going to be,
I think it's like the good choice.
Right? Yeah, I think, I mean, don't so. We think
that that's it, that his upside, right? Is the fact that he knows like players in Europe. In theory, he knows players in Europe that we do not know the names of, who are talented, who are in weird situations or lower leagues or whatever, that could be high level MLS players.
Yeah, as good as Rodolfo Borrell's resume is, it's a coaching resume. It's not a sporting director resume, but two things that he does have in his favor are, as you mentioned, this Rolodex of contacts and information that he has about players, and then the history of working with young players and like bringing up these really talented guys through these systems. And so that's my hope, is that he does know of this guy who wasn't a star in Europe, but played in Europe, and he knew is waiting for a chance to kind of make that next big step. I'm hoping that's the guy he can bring to Austin. It's maybe a bit unsatisfying of an answer because I don't know that guy's name, and we won't know his name until that transfer rumor comes out or until the signing is announced, but that's who I'm hoping it is.
Well, and to get into something we just talked, when we talked with Seth about, like about St. Louis, like nobody, those European names that St. Louis brought in, like nobody would have identified those guys. It's like
Edward Leuven is one of the best players in the league. Yep. One of my favorite players in the league. I had not heard of him until they signed him.
Yeah. Alex Rubio, what would it take for you to both have booze in the media room at Q2? For me, it would
be
them allowing for us. Yeah, yeah, for
nothing.
allowing booze in Q2 in the media room at Q2.
Yeah.
And I guess like not a judging look if I happen to bring like a flask in my backpack. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's anything beyond that.
Maybe the spirit of the answer is Austin FC choosing to neglect any amount of like media decorum in their press room. But if it were up to us, it would take absolutely nothing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Keith Simon asked,
you gonna go to, okay,
cool. How much of a chance does Sebastian Pino have of making the first team? I'm going to put it at below 25% of making the team,
even much lower chance. Team?
Yeah.
Really?
I would say so.
You don't see him being the third striker on a team that has only one on the roster right now?
I mean, again, we talk about this jump from MLS Next Pro to MLS. The guys who have made that jump and made big differences were the best players in MLS Next Pro the seasons before. If you look at the guys that Columbus has brought up, that other teams have brought up into their first team folds and have been like solid players, not even starters for the team, but just solid rotational guys. They were the best players in MLS Next Pro. Sebastian Pino was good. I would not call him the best player in MLS Next Pro last year. And so that makes me think that that gulf is probably bigger than what a lot of Austin FC fans would like to believe. So I hope he does. I hope I'm wrong, but I'm not going to put money on him making the first team right now.
Well, I like your faith in other players coming in to fill those spots, because I'm still a little bit like a third striker. Do you have a pulse? Especially for the first half of the year, not you know, before the summer window. Okay, Alex Rubio again. If you were a Roto, how would you cook? But I mean, cook. I guess literally, how do you cook? How do you cook your fry? Yeah, man, I cook nothing beyond the microwave.
Have you had paella before, Jeremiah?
I have not had paella.
I don't know where you could even get it. There are a couple of Spanish restaurants in Austin, but I don't know. One of them is a Basque restaurant, and I don't think they serve paella. The other one is a more traditional Spanish restaurant. I do not know if they serve paella, but paella is traditionally, it's like a rice dish. Traditionally, like the standard version is all seafood, but there's also versions of it that have like chicken or sometimes rabbit in it. And as the prairie dweller that I was growing up, I appreciate the little bit of regular meat in there to break up the seafoodness of it all. So yeah, if it were my paella, I would have some chicken or some rabbit in there.
Well, okay, gotcha. What I've had that is like a discada, which I feel like is kind of the same. Like it's a big round dish that you like throw a bunch of stuff in and grill over like a low flame in the backyard for a long time.
I've never had that, but I think it's different. A paella is a super like shallow dish that you like cook down very slowly. And I feel like what I know about discada is more like a stir fry kind of situation.
It is.
I could be wrong. Yeah. A paella is like you put it in there and you just like let it cook on its own. You don't like stir it or anything.
Okay. Look, again, I'm hungry. I feel like this is at least the second time I said this on the show.
But
so, let's go to the meat of the question.
So the question about letting Roto cook. I am an advocate for quote unquote letting Roto cook, but I think if I hear a bad joke about like a pun about Roto cooking or like hearing someone say Roto cook one more time, I'm gonna punt my phone into Lady Bird Lake. I'm getting so sick of it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm over this. I'm over this phrase, and largely because it's kind of one we all invented, right? It's got no basis in reality.
Yeah,
like Roto's never come and been like, I'm things are happening. I'm cooking. You know, we've created that narrative online around him. Okay,
And I did say I'm an advocate for being patient with him, and I want to reiterate this is not because I'm sure that he's going to be good at the job or because I'm sure it's going to work. It's just because we've seen absolutely nothing to judge him on yet. And so I think in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, when he has made a few signings, we see a little bit of the team, we can start that judgment process. But now we have absolutely nothing to base it on.
Totally. All right. I'm going to go into my coworker who I eat lunch with like twice a week, Ed Coates, who'd be annoyed if I didn't ask this question. What personal development do you think Josh Wolf should work on this offseason? He mentions an interview coach, player relationships. Where do you think Josh Wolf's biggest opportunities for improvement are during this season?
Yeah, I think Ed is right that he almost certainly could use some improvement, like in front of a microphone. Again, we don't know about player relationships, but we know at least a couple of players that have fallen out with him. And so, yeah, that's probably part of it. As far as the parts that we can like actually see, which is what happens on the field. I was reading just this morning some like tactical philosophy wonks that I follow on Twitter that like probably get into tactics a little too deep, I think, to a level that's like maybe not useful anymore. But it is very interesting as like a mental exercise sometimes to go down those holes. But they are discussing the idea that like tactical ideologies can become outdated over time, and that in positional play specifically, which is what Josh Wolf's style is based on, that rigidity can be a flaw if you don't have like players with the abilities to make it not a flaw. They, like their players don't create advantages for your team. We know that Wolf is, if you believe all of the people who have come out and said this publicly, that Josh Wolf is very well studied in the style, very intelligent tactically as far as it goes on paper. But I think it's possible that his version of this style has kind of run its course, or it's like the game has evolved past what he knows. And so my hope would be like, I've never had a problem with him being a zealot for this style. Like I think that's commendable in a certain way to say, like, I'm going to make this work. We're going to figure out how to make this work. My hope is that he is evolving his style with the modern game and evolving it based on what he's learned over the last three seasons and putting that into practice. That's what I hope he's working on this offseason.
And his Spanish again. I would like him to work on that too. That hasn't come out of it. But yeah, I think ultimately, whether he's like a good interview or not is not that important, because I remember, you know, like guys that win who are grumpy, everybody loves, right? Like Popovich and Bill Belichick and, you know, things like that. It's like when you're both losing and kind of a jackass, then that's like when people sort of get really frustrated by you.
Yeah.
So Hopefully he's worried more about the on-field stuff. Trevor Allison, any new Moon Tower shirts or other merch coming soon? Aside from Patreon stuff, we think so.
Yes. The short answer is yes. We can't
the
say
short answer
when
is yes.
We've hit some hurdles with merch stuff in the last year, but we do have some plans for something. We will have new Patreon stuff coming out soon. I think we can maybe start sharing or teasing some of that in the not so distant future, but we do have a shirt in the works as well that will be hopefully out sometime this year.
Yeah. Okay. ACX Birdcap Lover 6969420. My favorite like style of question. Which Muppet do you think is most likely to be an Apex Predator? Feel free to limit your selections to the Muppets that appear in the Muppet Christmas Carol. Do you have an answer? Because of course I do.
I'm not like I've seen Muppet stuff, but I'm not like a big Muppet head. So this is limited knowledge. But I would say if we're going off of like physical abilities, I think Animal is the obvious choice. If we're going off of mentality, I'm going to say Miss Piggy.
Interesting. Miss Piggy is probably like the one that has the will to be an Apex Predator. Like if not like the, you know, physical strength to deliver.
I think you've done more research on this and are maybe more knowledgeable about the Muppets. So I'm curious to hear your answer.
Yeah, I'm a big Muppet guy. I was going to ask, okay, the one question was, have you watched Muppet Christmas Carol? And is this, it is my favorite version of the Christmas Carol that I've seen.
I haven't seen it in 15 years, probably. Yeah.
Okay, so my answer is going to be Sam Eagle, also known as Sam the Eagle, which is basically he is probably a bald eagle, or maybe what was the there's like another eagle. He might be, I don't know. He's very large, judgmental, and apparently ran a barbecue restaurant and has an ex-wife. And I feel like if you're going to take a Muppet who's going to be like at the top of the food chain, one that owns a restaurant where he cooks other Muppets and also is like
an animal who is actually a predator.
And an animal who's actually a predator is probably the one that you're going to go with at this. Because for a while it went down this rabbit hole of like in the actual animal kingdom, predators tend to have eyes set on the front of their head and prey have the eyes set on the side of their heads. But every Muppet has front of the head eyes. So that was like a dead end.
Jeremiah is positing that every Muppet is a carnivore.
Every Muppet is a predator. And then once we establish that, then we just like figure out which one of them is like the most apex. It's like, yeah, I'm going to go with Sam Eagle. He was always angry. Comes from a carnivore background. has his eyes set before. And the other thing I had to figure out is like, he was in the Muppet Christmas Carol and actually had a song that he sang in the film. So he meets all the criteria.
Okay. Last question for today from Jeffrey and PJ. Remixing a previous question, if you had to remove someone from U.S. soccer history with the expressed intent to change history as much as possible for better or for worse, who would you remove? Wow. Do you have an answer here?
I don't have an answer off the top of my head.
I don't know if any of these, this is going to be like recency bias for me just because of my age and like when I started paying attention to soccer, but a few ideas that I had that I don't necessarily fully agree with some of them. I think like the cynical U.S. national team fans would say Berhalter, but I entirely disagree with that. I think if you just look at like the work that he's done maybe you could say this was from like the positive that he's done, that like dual nationals that have come in under his tenure, he's like, whatever you think of his tactics or what he does in the field, he's made the locker room a place that like players want to be in. And they really like to be there, and that you bring these dual nationals for a camp and they want to stay. I think that's positive. As far as what happens on the field, I think my answer would be Jurgen Klinsmann. It was like, however long he was there, just like no tactical identity whatsoever. And then another idea I had was John Harkes.
Oh man, that was the only idea I had. Actually, it was John Harkes.
Do you want to explain why to folks?
Yeah, if John Harkes in the, I think it was a 98 World Cup. Anyhow, John Harkes slept with Eric Winalda's wife, which caused like a big fracture among a pretty talented generation of U.S. national team players.
Yeah.
If that didn't happen, both like, who knows how this would have come out, how things would have happened in the moment, but also because U.S. soccer is so tied into that era of players. If there wasn't that mess, what would it have led to for like the next 20 years of U.S. soccer?
Yeah. The real answer is probably someone like, I don't know, like Sunil Gulati or like Don Garber's right-hand man or something like that. I don't know the answer, but these are some interesting ideas that are up. All right. I think that's all we have time for today, Jeremiah. Before we wrap up, I'd like to remind everyone to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Come find us online at LVAHero87 and JBentley_ATX on Twitter, and then at Moon Tower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And then check out the Patreon. We'll be coming out with some new rewards soon. Check out Phil West's Substack. We learned off the air with Seth. There's going to be some interesting stuff coming there in the not so distant future. And then, yeah, I think that's all. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode of Moon Tower Soccer. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time. When no one is around.
Thank for nothing, you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.